If you watch Christian television, you might conclude that God is a cosmic bellhop. He's available at our beck and call, and as a result, Christians never need to experience the fires of sorrow. And if they do, it's either because their faith is skewed or there's some sin dominating their lives. Unfortunately, in the real world, sickness, sorrow, and calamity often do happen to good people, including Christians, whether they watch Christian television or not. Helping you as a parent walk through the fires of sorrow. That's next on Licensed to Parent. Well, hello and welcome to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long Christ-centered residential program helping teens in crisis. Our host on Licensed to Parent is Trace Embry, the founder and executive director of Shepherd's Hill, and I'm Rich Rosel. And Trace, if there is one thing that Jesus guaranteed us in this life, it was tribulation, mm-hmm. not freedom from tribulation. Right. And yet a lot of us, I think, feel that we should get through life totally unscathed. Why is that?
Well, that's always boggled my mind, Rich. John 16:33, it couldn't be any more plain and straight from the mouth of Jesus himself. But in addition to him saying that in this life we'll have trouble, we have to remember that in all the people he addressed in that message, even though they were, you know, used mightily of God while they lived, they were all persecuted and died martyrs' deaths. And all through history, we can recount story after story of those people God used greatly only to allow them to be hurt deeply.
Yeah.
As just one example, I'm thinking of a guy, Horatio Spafford, a great Christian man who, after losing virtually everything in the great Chicago fire of 1871, including a thriving real estate business, 2 years later lost four daughters in the Atlantic Ocean. Then the guy, on his way to England to hear his close friend D.L. Moody preach, passes the spot where his girls drowned in the ocean and pens the song, "It Is Well With My Soul." Now, how many times has that song walked you and me both through our trials almost a century and a half later? God, even through the trials of losing a child, often uses our darkest times and our deepest hurts to help fulfill his ultimate will for our lives. So I'm really looking forward to hearing from our guests today as they share their story of how God walked them through their fire of sorrow.
Yeah. Well, today's guests have certainly lived through and come out from under a number of fires of sorrow in recent years. You will hear their story shortly. Elaine and Mitch Schultz have been married for 32 years. They have served as pastors for nearly 30 years, nine of those with the Christian and Missionary Alliance in England. They have three children, Travis, Brianna, and Brett, and are the guardians of two other children, Zachary and Natalie. And their ministry is now to serve those going through challenges and difficulties on the front line. Elaine, incidentally, and their son Brett are both cancer survivors. However, their oldest son, Travis, lost his battle to cancer at the age of 12. Mitch has authored four books that address issues of suffering and loss, including the one that we're discussing today, Fires of Sorrow.
Well, Mitch and Elaine, welcome to the Licensed to Parent broadcast.
So good to be here with you.
We're glad.
Mitch, over the past 30-plus years, you and Elaine have experienced a great deal of tragedy and triumph in the course of ministry, marriage, and the raising of your kids. Can you give us a little background on what God has walked you through and how you dealt with it and how you came to write the book, Fire of Sorrow?
Sure, and thank you for having us here. It's really a privilege to be here with you and to have my wife, Elaine, to join me in sharing this story.
Our pleasure.
It's really interesting. You mentioned 30 years. We really look at our lives broken into two halves. First half of our married life were really quite easy and comfortable. It's really been the second half that we've experienced a lot of hardship. But it was in England back in 99 that we hit our first wall of suffering when my wife Elaine, after a year of experiencing some very odd symptoms of fainting and dizziness, and after seeing a number of doctors who were not able to identify what the problem was, fell into a coma. We were actually visiting in Germany at that time and saw a number of doctors. And upon returning back to England, she was completely comatose, rushed her to the hospital in Warrington, England, where we were living. And they scanned her there and found that she had a mass in her brain. She was then rushed to Liverpool, which was 45 minutes away. And there they did an emergency surgery. later found that she had 20 minutes to live had they not performed the surgery.
Wow.
She was in a coma for a month. And when she came to, it was obvious that she the tumor had been on her speech center, and it had impacted.
And now she's doing radio.
And now she's doing radio. maybe she can interject a little bit, and she has a great story to tell of how she was, you know, kind of viewing things in the fog of that moment.
Right.
So Elaine, why don't you tell them what happened at this moment, because it's really a fascinating, kind of a funny story now in retrospect.
Well, really what had happened from my side of it is that as I was coming out after my surgery and through that month of just pretty much not knowing what had happened, but I realized that I was at the hospital, and I also realized that being a full-time teacher at the school, that there was a horrible doctor that came in day after day after day, and I would try to tell the nurses, could you please tell that man to stop going in here? And I really found that difficult, that he came in all the time every day to be with me. Yes, that was my husband, but at that time, it was just a doctor. But my mind started thinking through.
So you thought your husband was a doctor?
Well, I was just a full-time teacher. There was no family involved. There was no husband.
This was as a result of the surgery. You had lost those connections.
Correct.
Oh wow!
Totally. Had no idea.
So real quick, what was he doing that made him such a horrible doctor?
Pure doctor coming in daily.
He should have took off that white coat. That was a big deal. Right?
Wow. Yes, but the thing that was so amazing is from my mind, I saw these three wonderful children that came in from my side of it day after day after day at the hospital. And I kept wondering, where are their parents?
If those are your kids.
They were just children walking through the hospital that had no parents at all. So I suddenly thought, oh, maybe if I got married to that doctor, they would let me adopt those children and then they could be mine.
And long story short, it all worked out.
Yeah.
It did.
Wow.
Yeah, she fell in love all over with me again, didn't she?
That's the way it
happened. Yeah, the recovery period was quite lengthy. She was able to return home after about 2 months, but it was apparent that she had lost her ability to communicate, comprehend, and speak. She could not read or write. We returned back to the States, and we returned actually to Toccoa, Georgia, and started rehab. And a month after we returned to the States, as she was experiencing intense therapy, our oldest son, Travis, who was 12 years old, started exhibiting some strange balance issues. And after seeing a pediatrician locally, he was referred to a neurologist in Gainesville, and he was scanned. And after Travis had an MRI scan, he called the family together and informed us that Travis had a brainstem tumor.
Mm.
And in my mind, I just assumed, hey, Elaine had just had a brain operation to remove the tumor. This would obviously be what they would do for Travis. And, you know, another trial, another urgent situation, but it was resolvable. But he quickly informed us that this was the most severe kind of tumor. It was inoperable. Mm. In fact, there's no known case of anyone with a brainstem glioma that has survived more than 5 years. Travis went through radiation treatment and had a window of time where he improved some, was able to play soccer for a couple months, but then the tumor started to grow again, and he lived for 10 months and died in the end of August of 99. And Elaine continued to improve, and obviously after all these years has done quite well.
What was Travis's response to all this?
I think the biggest thing about him is he was very ready to see his Jesus. And
you trained him well.
He believed it from his very heart. And many people asked that he would be healed. And at our church, the elders had desperately prayed that he would be healed from this. And Travis said, as we walked to the car, I don't want to be healed. He says, I want to see my Jesus. And he then, with the big smile on his face, which is what he was always such a joyful and happy boy. He said, and I'm looking forward to getting to heaven because Nintendo is going to be so much faster there than it is here.
Well, Elaine, we live in a day when it's never been tougher to raise kids, even when our health is excellent. How can parents best stay encouraged and endure when serious health problems hit close to home, particularly when it strikes our kids?
It is, I think the way that I tend to tell people is that life is really difficult, and that's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And
which is congruent with what Jesus said.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, exactly. And what each one of us really needs to find God's joy. And I think for reading from His Word, from His Bible, that those things are things that we can keep growing and growing and growing. And there's so much joy in that. And the way that you can share that with other people and to get them to find Jesus for themselves.
The greatest joy I had with Travis was to engage with him on a spiritual level at the moments of deepest pain, those moments when he was unable to walk and I would carry him and he would say, he would say things like, "Dad, you're the most wonderful dad in the world." And we would pray together. We would read the Word together. He would read the Word. He was always doing Bible in England. He would do Bible lessons. He would send off and had a mentor assigned to him. And it was a wonderful experience. You know, and a kid to say, "I don't want to be healed. I want to be with Jesus." What do you do with that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how can you grieve long when you have that kind of legacy?
Thank God for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I believe that the teaching of God's Word, the prayer, the discipline opens doors for the Spirit of God to work in an individual. That's just a personal belief that I have. But how do we explain to our kids the love, the mercy, and holy intentions of God when He gives us a great encouragement like the healing of one of our family members, as in your case, Elaine, only to seemingly be blindsided with a subsequent calamity virtually overnight like Travis? I mean, how do we explain that to our kids? Because these things, you know, they do happen. And we go into try to figure out God mode. And sometimes you just have to say, is beyond anything.
I wrestled with that on a much greater level when my youngest son at the age of 12 was diagnosed with cancer back in 2006. I probably experienced more anger at that point because, you know, particularly when he was first diagnosed, because we didn't know what the outcome would be. He went through chemotherapy treatment, and I had to come to terms again with my own theology. You know, and in fact, a lot of the book, The Fires of Sorrow, where I tell my story, a lot of that is reflection on my theology and wrestling with what I really believe about God and how I understand the whole issue of suffering in relationship to the sovereignty of God.
When the hits keep on coming like that, where else do you go but to the Lord?
Yeah, and you have to really wrestle with what you believe. Do you really believe this?
Right.
You know? And,
yeah.
And what I often say is, if you really believe in the sovereignty of God, you have to accept suffering.
Sure.
And you even have to accept that God is either asking you to go through it or He's permitting it. Maybe those two things are the same thing. Mm-hmm. But either way, trust Him. Trust Him. The idea of being angry at God makes no sense to me. I often say it's like a child hurting himself outside and then going in the house and kicking his father for it. It makes no sense. You know, you need the father's embrace. The very person that you need the embrace from to be angry at that person makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
You need the embrace of the very one from whom you need comfort and strength.
Right.
I want to reiterate for those who may have missed it at the opening of our conversation today that not only did you, Elaine, go through cancer and come out of it, you lost your son Travis at the age of 12, but also your son Brett went through cancer. That's the triple crown, if you will, of bad stuff happening. Mm-hmm. That's a Job-like experience, a lot of people would say. Have you all in your subsequent ministry been able to adequately address people who I'm sure would use circumstances like yours to say, "I can't serve a God like that"? There is, you know, that's proof to me that there is no God, because if there was a benevolent God, then blah, blah, blah. Has that been something you've had to face as well?
I've thought of that many times and talked to people. if they believe that way and they live a life just for themselves, from my side, it seems sad, because even if they are right and I'm wrong, I would rather live a life to where I'm reaching out to other people and helping other mm-hmm. people. You know, and it's just, it's a very short life. Even if you make it to be 12 or if you make it to be 112.
Yeah.
I would rather live a life. It's a very short thing for heaven that is going to be forever, mm-hmm. forever, forever.
Toward the end of your book, you came to a place where you asked Elaine, Mitch, not knowing if she could really yet articulate herself well, if she had any bitterness toward God as a result of, you know, all your family had been through. And I thought her answer was very profound. She answered, "What good would that do?" I thought that was perfect. Would either of you like to elaborate on that for our listeners?
What good would it do to... to be angry at God.
Just shake your fist at God. You know, what good would it do?
Yeah, again, that goes back to what I think one of us said earlier, that the two options we have are either to be angry at God or to embrace, I'd much prefer his embrace than the distancing that comes from anger.
Mm-hmm.
Ultimately, he is sovereign. I live in the mystery of that. There's so much that I don't understand. I mean, would I trade a long life for Travis than the 12 years? Yeah, probably. I mean, honestly, as a father, I'd prefer to have him here.
Sure.
It's noble to say that, the 12 years and he loved Jesus. I think it's noble to say that, he's with Jesus and I would never trade it back. You know, if you were to look deep in my heart as a father, I'd love to have him here and see him married and, but ultimately, you know, if you put it all in light of eternity, I think you have to accept the fact that there's a whole lot more going on here than we can see and understand.
And as I said before, heaven is forever and ever and ever and ever.
Yeah.
And who you can take along.
And we have to accept by faith that mystery. And I think we live in a culture today that, our scientific empirical culture has to have the mystery taken out of as much as possible, or they don't believe it.
Yeah.
And yet there's so much more mystery even in what science has yet to discover. People don't realize that, though. You know, there's a whole universe out there to discover.
We're talking today with Elaine and Mitch Schultz and have been discussing, in part, Mitch's book, Fires of Sorrow. But more than that, we've been exploring their story, the story that led to the writing of that book. Details on how you can find it online and find out more about Mitch and Elaine's ministry in just a bit. This is Licensed to Parent with your host, Trace Embry. I'm Rich Rosel. You'll find us online at licensedtoparent.org. Back with more conversation in a moment.
In the training of our children, what role should public school play? Documentarian Colin Gunn takes a panoramic exploration of this issue by hopping in a school bus for a field trip all over America in the DVD Indoctrination. Colin conducts a series of candid interviews and discovers how God's recipe for training the next generation is being replaced with a humanistic, man-centered program that fragments the family and undermines the influence of the church and the Great Commission. Christian teachers and principals share how they're attempting to walk the tightrope between teaching what they do not believe and being restricted from their God-given call to be salt and light. Indoctrination, Public Schools and the Decline of Christianity in America. Available in the Licensed to Parent store at licensedtoparent.org. Proceeds support the Shepherd's Hill Academy Student Scholarship Fund.
This is Ken Ham, President and CEO of Answers in Genesis and the Creation Museum. And I just want to say how much I appreciate Licensed to Parent broadcast. I am so thrilled to know that there are those out there who are standing on the authority of God's Word in this age of compromise, but teaching parents how to build their thinking on the Word of God and to pass on that spiritual legacy to the next generation. So often we see that spiritual legacy being lost, and we need more people listening to broadcasts like Licensed to Parent so that they will know how to pass on that spiritual legacy to the next generation.
With the generous gifts from people just like you, we're able to provide parents with practical insights to navigate the challenges families face in today's culture, as well as helping troubled teens in our year-long residential program. To learn more and to donate, visit LicenseToParent.org.
You're listening to Licensed to Parent, the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy, a year-long residential Christ-centered program working with teens in crisis. Today on the program, we are working, well, with families in crisis, families facing the fires of sorrow. And our guests today are Mitch and Elaine Schultz. Mitch has written a book called Fires of Sorrow that we've been discussing. If you'd like to learn their whole story about some of the trials that they have been going through as a couple and a family, you'll find it in that book. Mitch, you have also put together some material that, and I forget the exact name, but it's like What to Do When People Say the Wrong Thing. Is that close?
Yeah, the book is called Did I Say the Right Thing?
Oh, Did I Say the Right Thing?
Responding Well to Those Who Suffer, I think, is okay. What it's called.
Well, this is a great thing because there are, all of us have come across death in one form or another, whether a neighbor, a friend, a coworker, a parent, somebody in your immediate family, a spouse or a child. And those around us are often saying the wrong thing, and we, for lack of knowing what to say, often yeah. say the wrong thing.
Like, what do we tell our kids when they come home from youth group claiming that they or we didn't have enough faith to heal our little brother or sister, and that's why they died? How do we respond to stuff like that?
Yeah, I think there are two separate issues. What Rich is talking about are two extremes of either saying the wrong thing or saying nothing, and really Christians or anyone really trying to find the balance of mm-hmm. being sensitive and saying the wrong thing. And I think, Trace, what you're talking about is addressing this issue of faith or having an erroneous idea of faith. And so what I would say in regard to what Rich is referring to is being really intentional in talking to people who are suffering. And what the book Did I Say the Right Thing addresses is being very intentional in talking to people who are grieving. And what I do in the book is I identify, and this is from my own experience, and really from the mistakes that I made prior mm-hmm. to the experiences we referred to earlier. What I said that I should not have said, but also as a pastor, what I learned from those mistakes, but also what I heard from others being said to us. And in this booklet, I put down 10 what I call egg crushers, just crush the egg rather than tiptoeing around it. There are just things that we need to say or need to do that are very helpful to people. For examples, I think one example is people will come after a funeral and say, I meant to come, but I never did, you know, and then they stop there. And, mm-hmm. and what I'll say is, well, it's never too late.
Yeah.
You know, you meant to come. Well, you still can come.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. and so they feel like they're off the hook by saying, I meant to come.
Yeah.
That doesn't help to say that.
Yeah.
Follow through and still come.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does put people in an awkward position. I mean, I've been through it too, and it is awkward for them. I've also felt awkward trying to approach someone, even though I've been through similar stuff. So I do empathize a little bit with them.
Real quick, from either or both of you, what was something that a person may have come up and said that was the most helpful?
Probably the most helpful thing was acts of kindness, just coming and doing things for us.
Okay.
I think what people are probably hard on themselves about is when they don't do anything for fear of doing the wrong thing, and mm-hmm. so they're not involved at all.
Yeah.
I think death is messy. Grieving is messy. There's no script. There's no perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any way to do this that is absolutely perfect. So, I mean, even in the book, I lay out things that are just suggestions. And, I mean, I blow it all the time. So right. I think just showing up, you might not say things exactly right. So just get engaged. Try your best. But I think the people that are most effective to us was the consistency of just being there.
Okay.
And just coming from the heart and just showing that you love us. was really helpful.
Elaine, was there anything that spoke to you during that time? And of course, I know you were fighting other battles simultaneously.
The thing that means the most to me is that Jesus is my best friend. And I think people need to find time with him to help them through life, because life is really difficult. And Jesus is the only one that can get us through these things.
Amen.
Let me, I know time's running out. The issue of faith that Trace was addressing, when people are struggling with not having enough faith, Ronald Dunn in his book, When Heaven is Silent, refers to faith as what is needed to continue trusting Jesus when things don't go our way. Faith is not what we need to make things happen. It's what we continue to need when things don't happen. And that's how I would address something, a dilemma like a youth coming and saying, hey, I didn't have enough faith, when something did not go the way I hoped it would.
Yeah. I need to jump in here real quickly because, as we have alluded to on many other programs, the time gets the best of us and we are out of time. Our guests today on Licensed to Parent have been Elaine and Mitch Schultz. We've been discussing their story, the story that led to Mitch's book, Fires of Sorrow. We've also most recently been discussing another publication that Mitch put out that helps people learn how to say the right things and react in the right way when the wrong things are said. And Mitch, I'm going to ask you about both of these resources. First of all, tell me again the correct name for that second book, and where can we find these if we want to get them online or wherever?
Right, both Fires of Sorrow and Did I Say the Right Thing, which is a booklet, can be found on our ministry website, fruitfulvineministries.com.
Okay.
Can be and a resource page, or you can go to Amazon, and both books are available there.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you both. You have poured your hearts and your lives out on the radio today, which is not always a natural thing to do, but thanks so much for being a part of the program.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you have been listening to Licensed to Parent. Again, our guests, Elaine and Mitch Schultz. The main book we talked about was Fires of Sorrow. You can find us online at licensedtoparent.org. Licensed to Parent is the radio outreach of Shepherd's Hill Academy. And as we approach the end of the year, that's a time when so many people make financial contributions to various ministries and other nonprofit organizations, I'd like to invite you to consider joining us in our mission to help troubled teens and their families by becoming one of our ministry partners. Your gift in any amount, whether it's a one-time gift or an ongoing monthly donation, will go directly toward helping kids get the help they need through the Shepherd's Hill Scholarship Fund. And for tax purposes, all donations are tax deductible. You can give securely online today by going to licensedtoparent.org and clicking the donate button located at the top of the page. Again, that's licensedtoparent.org. Well, that is it for today. I'm Rich Rosl, along with Trace Embry, inviting you back again next time to renew your license to parent.
And remember, folks, if you don't train your children, somebody else will. God bless. See you next time.